Here's a news flash.
Surprise, surprise.
Well, look at you.
The whole world is watching for my next move.
Oh my God.
Times have changed. There are no rules.
You're gonna love it.
Hi, and welcome to Skip Intro, the podcast from Binge, all about the world's best television. Each week, we're here to discuss the biggest new shows on Binge, along with our dinner party recommendations. My name is John Boehm, here with Ali Herbert-Burns, and together we look after all the great movies and TV that you see on Binge. Ali, once again, we've got a drama and a doco to talk about this week.
We do.
Very different.
Really different, but we have a crime drama, which is always one of our favourite things to talk about, and a really topical and newsy documentary about Kim Kardashian and Kanye West's marriage and then subsequent divorce. So the first show I think we should maybe talk about is, this is its actual title, I'll try and get it right. The following events are based on a pack of lies. So you're used to us saying that the show's based on a true story. This is a bit of paying, a bit of poking, a bit of fun. It's not based on a true story. It's a crime series though. It comes from the UK. So we'll talk about that. And then Kim v. Kanye.
I feel like at least 15% of today's podcast is just going to be us pronouncing that very long title. But let's jump into it.
He was a self-made property developer. He said it was the opportunity of a lifetime.
I think I should have known.
I never heard from him again.
From the producers of Chernobyl and This Is Going to Hurt comes the deliriously long-titled new British thriller, The Following Events Are Based on a Pack of Lies. Delving into the web of deception left by a con man and the two women trying to uncover the truth. Ali, that as much work as the very long title does, this show does take a little bit of explaining, but its premise is very simple and very pulpy and sort of intriguing. But basically, there is a gentleman, Robert, who disappears from Alice's life. And then a number of years, she sees him again on the street, and it turns out he's sort of reinvented himself.
We should say Alice is his wife. So this man goes out for dinner and never comes back.
Goes for chow mein.
Never comes back. Asks for £10 to go pick up the takeaway, never comes back. Then the wife sees him many, many years later on the streets. Yeah.
And then she starts to investigate him and finds out that he's basically playing a con on another woman who's almost like a George R.R. Martin figure. She's very wealthy and she's written this big series of fantasy novels. But yeah, it's these two women who share a common con man and the sort of investigations that go on to get to the bottom of what's happening. That description, I think, is obviously a very compelling show in itself. But what makes this show very interesting is it's like tone and style. I don't quite know how to describe it. It's like a little bit Wes Anderson-y. I don't want to say quirky because that's not right, but it's got this like really interesting heightened tone to it, which sort of makes the whole world very interesting.
My biggest comp to it when I started watching it was Killing Eve. Because remember when Killing Eve came out and they did crime in quite a colorful, bright, block colors, like a humor, but it was almost a bit, it was black comedy.
Yeah.
This felt a little bit like that. I think Wes Anderson's a really good example as well. It felt kind of Swedish or something. Like it just had a really different way. It used colour and direction and the characters. You got introduced to a lot of them at the very beginning all at once. And I just ask you to go with it because it will feel like you're adjusting to it as it goes on because it's stylistically very different to things that we're used to seeing, which is actually, as I got into it, what I really loved about it. It was just refreshingly different way to tell a story. And by episode two, you're really understanding the universe, who this guy is. And then I found the story of the two women so hooky and ultimately kind of coming together.
And Killing Eve is a great example because there is almost this cat and mouse thing where especially Robert and Alice, the former partners who hadn't seen each other in years, start to almost cross paths again, but they're both lying about who they are. And the crime at the center of it is, you know, it's fraud and deception, but there isn't sort of murder or anything too heavy, which makes the world that they're in this heightened, almost comedic setting. The author lives in this enormous house with a dog, goblin, I think it's called.
That was the house that was in, have you seen the film, The House of Gucci? I'm sure that house was in The House of Gucci. I'm sure I'd seen it before. It's like a massive mansion, isn't it? But yeah.
And the Robert character, who's sort of reinvented himself in this new form, he's almost tried to turn himself into this like Bear Grylls style character. Like he's this sort of larger than life explorer who, you know, jumps off buildings at cocktail parties and stuff. So yeah, it's almost cartoony in a way, because what's happening is so surreal and silly, but there is this real, quite compelling crime at the center of it, which is this man who is deceiving basically everyone in his life. The cast is brilliant. So Cheryl, who plays the author that I mentioned, is played by Mariana Jean-Baptiste, who is an Academy Award nominee. Rebecca Staton plays Alice, the lead role, and she's been in Black Mirror and Pulling, but you'll know her face and she's fantastic in this role. She's also wearing sort of a cape the whole time, which when you watch, you'll understand why. And then the con man at the center of it, Alastair Petre, I want to say, also incredibly familiar. He was in The Night Manager. He's in Sex Education. And binge viewers will also know him from Funny Woman, which came out this year as well. So yeah, it's got an amazing cast. Looks like an incredibly expensive show based on just the sets and everything that's going on. But yeah, really compelling. I would say like takes half an episode
to adjust to the setting.
Yeah. And like you said, they introduce so many characters. But then as soon as you sort of get the mystery and get what's happening, it's a fascinating world to live in because it is so heightened and strange.
Yeah. And yeah. I mean, you said before, this is from Sister Productions, who are behind some of the best shows and some of the things that we've loved the most that have come out of England in the last few years, like This Is Gonna Hurt, The Split.
Chernobyl.
We talked about on the podcast last year, The Baby, which was like, again, quite a Scandinavian vibe to a horror crime show. Like they do really different things that kind of set the stage or kind of like set the tone on things. So like you've got a really acclaimed production company behind this. It's got a rave review by The Guardian in London. I think it's definitely worth sitting down and watching a few at a time because, you kind of follow what's going on and the first episode, put your phone down and follow along. But it's beautiful. It's shot in Oxford. The countryside's beautiful. It's very on point. It's making a bit of a parody of how easy it is to convince the world. I like this element to it, which has got nothing to do with the story, but is almost just this moment in time of kind of worthy preaching, isn't it? The con man, he's playing a caricature that everyone just wants to get behind and to retweet and to say they've read his books and are going to his events because he's.
And it's so easy for him to waft into these people's lives.
He puts on a fancy accent. He says he's been to Oxford. He connects into a whole lot of kind of academic kind of money that, is pushing forward climate stuff. It's all the things people want to support and see action happening on. And he's tweeting that he's off to Iceland or whatever. I just think it's also so clever at how they've chosen him being a con man as that, not a con man selling a used car or something that you're more used to seeing. So I just also found that really clever and sophisticated as another layer to the universe that they put it in. And it just doesn't matter kind of what your education is or your background, how is such a kind of narcissistic and very clever con man, he fools a range of different people. These women are quite different, aren't they, in terms of their background and approach, but he still manages to swindle them both. So I found it really compelling.
I do think gonna end up having a bit more to say than I think maybe we've clocked right now, because I think they're building up to a lot of things. So the following events are based on A Pack of Lies. It starts Friday on Binge with new episodes streaming weekly. But if you want to wait for them all to be available, the finale is out mid-October.
Which I will on this one. Like I know we give people the opportunity. We try and fast track it for them or they can choose to watch it as they want. But I would give this one a few episodes to get stuck into it because it's kind of lost in the world.
Yeah. And it's only 5 eps, so it'll be a nice weekend binge for you in October.
Anyway, the following events are based on A Pack of Lies. Try saying that after a few drinks.
Alice, this is the husband that buggered off with all your money.
Yes.
Wikipedia says he's some kind of posh science expert, but he's not.
Oh, Alice. He's got a Wikipedia.
You can write your own Wikipedia.
Can you?
No, I don't think you can.
Have you called the police?
With insider access to the lawyers involved, Kim versus Kanye, The Divorce is the new 2-part documentary exploring the billion-dollar marriage breakdown, told from both perspectives from those most involved.
I mean, as crazy as it sounds, they are our royal family.
The stated reason for the divorce was irreconcilable differences.
What we really learned in this case was this was a toxic relationship.
We've seen a few of these documentaries recently looking at two sides of the story. One episode's one side, one episode's the other. This does that very well. The first episode is told from, I guess, Kanye West's lawyers and friends and family's point of view. And the second episode is told from Kim's point of view. But it also gives you just sort of a general history of both of these two basically two of the biggest celebrities in the world and how they ended up together and now how they've ended up apart.
I think it's got Kanye's lawyers, divorce lawyers in it. And because he went through a number of them. He kept firing them. And one of the ones that gets fired speaks and explains how they took it on and the situation they found themselves in. Another one of the lawyers references that they left because they were really involved in the Jewish community in New York. And after some of the anti-Semitic stuff that Kanye came out and said, he removed himself from the trial on the basis of, kind of moral beliefs and stuff. So, yeah, it's a really interesting, but the lawyers still didn't kind of spill the tea completely, but it certainly gave you some insight.
Well, I think there's only so much you can say.
I know. I mean, I was surprised they were even on it at all. But
Yeah. Great access for what you can, given.
And it's
so many of these documentaries usually just rely on like stock footage and stuff. So yeah.
They're definitely talking, you know, and they show some clips from the Hulu and the E Keeping Up with the Kardashians or the Kardashian series. And yeah, a couple of Kanye's really good friends are interviewed. And whilst it doesn't leave us right up to date with the holiday that we've been seeing them take throughout Italy in the last few weeks, Kanye that is, and his new partner, an Australian woman, it does kind of leave you quite close in time to where we find them now separate, well, legally separated and divorced, and where they're up to now in their life. So quite timely as well, which is good.
Like you said, there is footage from the many reality shows that these people have all been on. And I found it really interesting when you would cut from, you know, their lawyers or their friends or someone talking about a scene, and then you would see the sort of glossy produced version of it in the reality show. And then you'd maybe get a bit of backstory as to what was actually happening. Yeah, I just think it's really interesting. They were married for 6 years. It's a relatively long time. Something that I hadn't really clocked, and someone said this really well in the documentary, was how polished and stage managed the entire Kardashian's careers has been from like 1994, when she says in that video she wants to be famous, right up to now and the woman that we know she is, versus the sort of chaotic, unplanned nature of Kanye's life and career. And, you know, he came from a broken home. She came from an affluent family. He's obviously had, you know, mental health issues. Everything that she's done in her life has been about her brand and her family. And it was just interesting to see that, like, of course there was going to be an issue when you brought these two very different people together. But for whatever reason, until I watched this, it didn't kind of clock with me that, oh, this kind of does make sense.
It's funny because, like, Kanye's, you know, gets talked about being brought up by his single mother in Chicago, but she's a college professor. He had been famous himself for a long time by the time they get together and had been a real admirer for her and had been wooing her. She was married to this other guy. They'd been longtime friends. And he kind of came in really hard, almost in like a love bomby kind of way, I think, that Kim goes ahead and has this wedding to the guy that she's been dating because they've got this huge big television wedding. And only after a couple of months, she calls it off and she's with Kanye quite quickly thereafter. And in some ways, having watched her through the years, as you know, that's the listeners to the pod will know, I love my reality television. So I kind of, when they got together, I was like, he'd been in the show a few times over the years as a friend and they were in each other's orbit and you could tell that he just kind of like adored her. But, and I was like, well, they're both so famous, like Kanye can handle it because a lot of the other guys that come in, it's just like, it's a production, yeah, and it's a total business and it's a lot. I actually thought, oh, he's so famous in his own right, like, you know, maybe they will make it. But I think what comes out in this documentary and from following it, you know, through the tabloids in the last couple of years is how probably unhealthy elements of this relationship are. And there was almost I kind of use the word love bombing, but even later on, he's trying to get her back, even though they've been divorced and separated for many years and Kim has moved on. And he's delivering truckloads of flowers to the house and, you know, bought the house over the road. It's kind of concerning to see how bad it all goes in the end.
Part of the fascination of watching the Kardashians over the last 20 years or however long they've been in our lives is their sort of rise to fame. And I kind of, and correct me if I'm wrong, it almost feels like when they got together, he was still a much bigger celebrity than she was. And over the last few years, it almost feels like she's overtaken him in terms of celebrity and power and wealth and things like that. I think she was accused of using him to raise her profile at the time, but now she's sort of the biggest celebrity in the world.
Yeah, I think she had more paparazzi and more of that kind of like tabloidy coverage. Like she was already super, super famous in her own right. But yeah, he had the kind of cred of being, yeah, like a really credible musician, you know, one of the highest selling of all times, winning awards. Like he was like properly cool, you know, and for being a brilliant musician, and where she always had speculations to how she'd become famous, and you know that it wasn't. Well, she might have worked hard. I think she tried to keep it together with him for a long, long time. That, you know, she's talked a lot on other shows about being 3 times divorced and really struggling with the breakdown of the marriage. And they've got 4 children between them, and yeah, it's kind of sad to see how it all ultimately ends.
Mm. The documentary, not just because it was made by the same people, but just sort of the tone and everything, it reminded me of House of Hammer, mm-hmm. which we also have on binge. And of course, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, we talked about The Trouble with Kanye,
yeah.
which was a great one-off documentary that was less about his relationship with Kim necessarily, but just more about his sort of general career to date. So yeah, House of Hammer and Trouble with Kanye are also both streaming on binge, along with both episodes of Kim vs. Kanye, The Divorce, which are streaming for you right now.
Kanye may be a rich and powerful artist, but he's never dealt with something as powerful as the Kardashian legal machine.
Over the course of this divorce, Kanye seemed to run through 10 lawyers, maybe more.
This was not a guy that was going to take the end of his marriage lying down.
I could see in her eyes how much pain this woman is going through.
John, we're at the stage of the pod where we talk about dinner party recommendations, hidden things on binge, things we're loving, things we tell our friends about around the kitchen table when we're having dinner, or the dinner table, wherever you might have hung out with your friends. I had a few of these over the weekend, lunches and dinners, and lots of people talking about lots of shows. What's your dinner party pick for us this week?
The thing that I have spent the last week asking every person I know is one very simple question, which is, how often do you think about the Roman Empire? Which is almost as long a title as the following events are based on a pack of lies. But for people who aren't familiar, a little trend popped up on the internet over the last few days asking sort of particularly the men in your life, but anybody, how often they think about the Roman Empire. And the reason it's kind of taken off because, you know, to a lot of people's surprises, myself included, turns out a lot of people think about the Roman Empire all the time. I don't. I've thought about it a lot more in the last week than I previously had.
I don't even realize you're thinking about the Roman Empire because it's
so founded
in language and so many things like around the way things work.
I have spent the last week, you know, thinking about aqueducts and gladiators and various things. But this whole trend that sparked off in the last few days did make me think about the Roman Empire. And unsurprisingly, for people who've spent any time on binge, we have a massive collection of documentaries and drama series, but we have a surprising amount of these about the Roman Empire. So we spun up a little carousel over the last few days for people to explore their passion in the Roman Empire. And a couple that I wanted to point out, Gladiator, obviously beloved film. We've got a very recent documentary from the History Channel called Colosseum, which looks at the Roman Empire through the prism of the Colosseum and obviously all the things that happened there. But the one I wanted to shout out, because I guess the TV nerd in me enjoy some of the history of it, is the HBO-BBC co-production Rome, which came out in the early 2000s, lasted 2 seasons, was probably best known for being incredibly expensive. I think it cost $120 million in like 2000. And it's definitely one of those, if you like Game of Thrones or if you like House of the Dragon, watch Rome. But what I also found really interesting about it is a lot of people have basically said Game of Thrones wouldn't exist without Rome, which I think is really interesting. And part of that is because it was one of HBO's first big, like, epic swords and sandals things. It got canceled partially because it was very, very expensive. But there's also a fairly sort of direct link between what HBO learned making Rome and then what they very quickly went into with Game of Thrones. So I think it's really interesting, just almost, you know, like a TV history world to revisit Rome, which we have all episodes of.
Well, binge. I wandered into the lounge room the other day and my husband was watching this documentary about the Roman Empire. And I said, how many times a day do you think about the Roman Empire? And he just looked at me and was like, what are you talking about? Anyway, he was like, oh no, I just saw this great carousel. And he was watching one of the 6-part series, which I then sat down and we ended up watching together, which is really interesting. So I just assumed, John, that somehow through the wonders of the internet, you'd actually created the trend as a way to showcase all the thousands and thousands of history documentaries that we have. But no, that's really funny. I love it when what's on the platform reflects what's happening in life. There was some news last week that Hugh Jackman and his wife, actress, Australian actress, Deborra Lee Furness had announced that they were separating after 27 years, which kind of sent a bit of a shockwave through the Aussie film and TV industry. They've been together for a long, long time. There's a couple of Hugh Jackman series on binge, but there's a recent film we've just dropped starring Hugh Jackman and Laura Dern, for fans of Laura Dern and Vanessa Kirby. It's called Sun. It was a film from 2022. You might see it pop up because we've only just put it up, haven't we? So I thought that might be a good one to point out to people. It's the story of Hugh Jackman and his ex-wife and the way they're looking after his son and wanting to be the father that he really wants to be. But it's also, if you want an oldie but a goodie, got Swordfish. And then we have an HBO film that Hugh Jackman, I've talked about this on the podcast before, called Bad Education, with the West Wing's wonderful Allison Janney for a few years ago, which is awesome. He plays a corrupt high school kind of inspector and principal who's embezzling money. It was based on a true story, which is a brilliant.
Which was actually based on a true story.
It was actually based on true stories. Yeah, from New Jersey, I think. So highly recommend Bad Education if you're in a Hugh Jackman kind of mood. A couple of things there on binge to look out for.
But yeah, how can you go past Swordfish?
I know.
What an iconic film. I think I was working at the cinemas when that came out.
John, can I have extra popcorn, please?
Sure.
I would have loved to have met John in the cinema.
Now, I have been told that the best crackers in the world can do this in 60 minutes. Unfortunately, I need someone who can do it in 60 seconds.
You're kidding.
Not.
This week on Skip Intro, we talked about the following events are based on A Pack of Lies. We talked about Kim versus Kanye, the divorce. I recommended that you revisit the Roman Empire. And Ali called out some great Hugh Jackman films that we have available for you. All of these titles are streaming for you now on Binge, which of course you can find on your favorite device. I'm John Boehm, joined every week by Ali Herbert Burns. Thank you so much for listening. This podcast was produced by Dan Barrett with audio editing and mixing by Chris Yates. And we'll be back next week with more Skip Intro.